Welcome to the Gottesdienst Crowd, where we foster confessional integrity, liturgical preservation, and preaching that doesn't stink. We believe that the historic liturgy of the divine service is more than mere cobwebs of antiquity, but it is a true treasure of the church to be dusted off and brought down from her attic to be enjoyed. So let's get dusting.
Welcome back to the Gottesdienst Crowd. This is Jason Broughton, your host. Today we have back with us Ben Ball. He is the pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. He is the sixth vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and he is our conferences editor and a blogger. Welcome back, Ben.
Hey, great to be back on the awesome Gottesdienst Crowd podcast.
Yeah, we took about a month off with schedules, and I got sick, and there was a few things, but we're back at it, so that's good.
I was missing it. I was worried.
You were worried that I gave it up.
Yeah, I'm like, man, Broughton just quit. Forget it.
No, you'd get angry emails first.
Yeah, it would be like, you guys, you're always ducking me. We schedule something, then you cancel, so I quit.
Yeah.
So, but he didn't do that, so.
Right. Well, today we're going to look at, this is going to be a shorter one because I think the topic doesn't deserve a full hour and a half. It is a listener's question. What do you do when you get a call? Like, what's the process that a pastor should go through? And maybe we can even back that up to, what do you do when you get the awkward phone call, hi, I'm so-and-so on the board of elders from such-and-such church. Will you let your name stand? Or are you able to let your name stand or something like that?
Yeah. Well, I think we always want to think these things through theologically. And I'll just give some general advice, just thinking theologically about the call. There's a really good resource that everybody should have are Gerhardt's Theological Commonplaces and On the Ecclesiastical Ministry, part one. He deals with the divine call. And I would just say, hey, if you don't have that in your library, you need to get it and read it. Again, it's part one of the ministry, section four, beginning at page 111, and you'll be grounded in the fact that the call that you've received, like if you got one now, is divine, mediated through the church according to Christ's own institution. So, you know, we don't have time to deal with all that today, but it's really important that you think about this when you receive a call, if you have one. You are a pastor of the church, how God has made you to be a pastor of the church, and Gerhardt will not lead you astray. Thinking that through and reminding yourself of what you've received as a pastor of the Church of Jesus Christ. So that being said, I'm a pastor. I get a phone call from some congregation somewhere saying, hey, pastor, I'm a chairman of the call committee, or maybe it's a circuit visitor. And is there any reason why you can't let your name stand for our vacancy? Now, that happens much more frequently, I think, than it did in former days. This kind of preliminary divine feeler, is there any reason why you can't, you know? I don't know why that is exactly, but it's just, it happens. And I think this is where the devil really can gain a foothold for us. I think it's much better for pastors to be blissfully ignorant of some of this initial weeding through call lists. Maybe it's just me, but I'm given to covetousness a bit too much. Mm. And I think when you hear that, you immediately start thinking, oh, I can go check this place out. And you go on their website and you're looking at at synod.org and looking at their stats and how many people are there and, you know, what's the budget like and all this. Can you start asking your buddies, hey, do you know this church? And the guy will say, yeah, I put your name on that call list. You know, all that kind of stuff. I think that is completely not helpful at all for you to conduct, or me, I'm talking about myself, conducting my ministry in the place where God has placed me. So I wish they wouldn't call and say, you know, you're on our call list. But, you know, they're doing their due diligence. So my sins really aren't their problems at this point. If they call me, then my sins will be their problems. But, you know, they just want to know, you know, they get 20 names from a district president. Should we even bother going through your Piffin set? Because those documents are long and thick, and call committees want to do proper diligence as they're trying to ask the Lord to give them guidance as to who should be their next pastor. So they want to know, all right, is there any reason why you can't? And this is where, and it's posed that way on purpose. Because there are reasons why you couldn't. Like, you've just, you've only been serving at a place for a year or so. Or maybe you're in the thick of something right now that, where you're caring for your flock, that you know from the get-go, whatever that thing may be, you just can't leave right now, mm-hmm. as far as you can humanly tell. Now, they might still call you, and God might still call you completely out of the blue, mediated through his church. Like, guys have been called that way for a long time. You just might be sitting there, and all of a sudden you get a phone call and say, hey, our congregation extended you a divine call to be the pastor. The paperwork's going to be in the mail, right? Mm-hmm. That might happen. But when they do ask you, you know, you just simply just, I think most guys will simply say, it's rare where a guy could say, no, I simply could not legitimately deliberate a call at this time. I mean, there are certainly extenuating circumstances. For the most part, you'd say, yes, there's no reason why I couldn't. Unless, you know, some churches might not have heard that you just accepted one. You're leaving the place where you are. But, you know, so for the most part, you're just going to say, no, there's no reason why I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, thank you. And then they're going to kind of move along. And I think it's at that point where you shouldn't do the things that I've done. Start digging around about this church, you know, who are these people? Who got my name on the list? You need to simply keep your hand on the plow where you are at this point. And you have no call in hand, and you are just going to keep on doing what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, you just tell them, yeah, hey, you can, if you extend a call to me, I'll deliberate it properly. But at this point, you're just going to, no problem. And you get back about your business. I don't know. What have you done?
Yeah, typically I've just made a note to pray for them.
You're real pious. That's really good.
But I think you're right, though. It is difficult not to go investigating, right? I think particularly, too, if you've just been through Easter or Christmas and you're somewhat tired and a little annoyed at how many people didn't show up or something like that, it can be difficult not to begin to pine for the greener grass on the other side or what you think is going to be greener. So that can be difficult not to do. But, when I tell when people ask, what should I do about this? You know, because so-and-so is making me mad, or, you know, I have two responses. One is go to confession and pray, you know, pray for that person. Instead of beginning to get selfish about, you know, what I want, to think about what the needs of the Lord's church is right then and there.
Yeah, that boy, you've given me good advice. Of course, this isn't happening to me, so I guess we'll get to that later. Maybe, I mean, you think this is going to be 20 minutes. We'll see what happens, because I think everybody's we're in such different circumstances. I mean, I've been a pastor now for 20 years. It's really, I think I'm to the point where, it's just not, I'm not getting these phone calls like you're on a call list anymore. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, but you had, right?
I have, of course. Yeah. Yes, I have. Yeah.
I mean, Hamel is not the first place you served.
Nope. No, yeah. And I guess I can talk about my own experiences, how this all worked. So,
yeah.
Because, you know, when I was serving, so my first call at a seminary was out in Massachusetts. And the first call I received after 5 years there, I accepted up to St. Paul Brookfield. And then I only received one other call at St. Paul Brookfield, and that was here to Hamel. You know, so I have not, I don't know, some guys get lots of calls. I haven't. I mean, maybe I don't know. I've received two and accepted them both. Maybe mm-hmm. that's a lot. I don't know. But I did when I was younger, though, I did receive a lot more of these, you know, you're on our list deals.
Holy Spirit feelers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the last one I received was maybe it was a couple of years ago. And I just told, but I guess I told them I would be obviously open to deliberate a call, but I have no desire to, you know, I just was very honest. I said, I have no desire to leave my congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, I think that should be our default. We pray that's our default. We have no desire to leave where we are, you know? Of course, it's not always the default.
Yeah,
It's not always the case, right? It's not always the case. But I told them the last time it happened. And I suppose I told them that too, even when I left Massachusetts. I mean, we had no earthly reason to leave Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it's the funny joke I tell about my wife is when I received the call to leave Massachusetts, you know, she said, "You're ruining our life." No, she said, "You're ruining my life." That's what she said. Which was hilarious at the time.
Well, aren't her parents east on the East Coast? Or
No. Her parents are from Montana.
Oh, that's
She's
right.
from Montana. So we've only gotten closer to her parents over the years.
Yeah, so she shouldn't complain.
That's
you
right.
can tell her I said that.
So anyway. But, you know, kind of getting to let's say the first time I accepted a call, how I thought it through. And I think, at the time, Professor Warnick, now retired from the St. Louis Seminary, he had a nice little sheet, which I've since lost, but I've kind of put it in my memory banks as to how to actually properly deliberate and discern. And there's some really basic things that you need to do kind of paperwork-wise, which I think are still very important. And then I'll kind of get to the, like what he talked about, how thinking about it and praying about it. The first thing you got to do is when you receive a call from another congregation, you actually need to write letters. I know we don't do this anymore, but you have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to write back to the congregation that you are in receipt of a divine call from them and that you ask for their prayers and for the wisdom of God as you discern and deliberate. And you copy that to the district president, your own. If it's from some other district, that district president, you copy your circuit visitor and the circuit visitor of the place that called you.
Yep.
So you're sending one of the congregation and you're sending four other copies potentially out. You're letting everybody know that you've received this call from this congregation. And you also, I think it's really helpful you got to tell your own congregation, and this is always the hard kind of touchy thing, how you do it at first when you let them know that you've received a call. I think you should always do it at the divine service.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to announce to them that this you've received this divine call and that we are all going to be fervent in prayer for God's guidance during this time of deliberation. And you need to welcome from them any advice and counsel that they might have as members of the church. Now, I can tell you that sometimes, and we hope this is the case, there will be people who will be really honest and say, "Pastor, we want you to stay, not because we just like you, but because we don't think that your ministry is concluded here, mm-hmm. right? There's still things that you have to do that we're working on together for the sake of Christ's kingdom that we think we should continue.
Yeah.
And then you might say then, okay, like what, right? I mean, you want to actually talk to people that you're serving about how they see the ministry is continually being conducted by you, received by them, and how the life of the church is going in the place where you are. You mm-hmm. want to really talk to them about it.
Well, and I think that's, if there are any laity who are listening to this, if your pastor gets a call and asks for counsel, he's not just being nice.
That's
he
right.
actually desires it.
Yep. Yeah.
So don't be shy.
Exactly. And don't be shy if you think your pastor should accept the call either. I had at my first congregation when I was out in Massachusetts and I got the call to Brookfield, I had one of the elders said, Pastor, I really think you should take this call. That was really, it was really helpful to me. And he had some really legitimate reasons why. And he thought it'd be very beneficial for the church and for me to go. That was really nice, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. usually you don't hear that. Usually it's, oh, we love you, you know, please stay, or which is great, yeah. you know. But it doesn't help you think things through.
Right, right.
Okay, so first is just the communication to all these people, right?
Now, when you communicate to them, do you immediately announce when you'll decide? Do you at least give them a preliminary date?
I've never done that. Well, actually, it's funny you asked that question because when I know exactly the date of Hamel's voters meeting. It was September 23rd, 2012, because I got a call from the chairman of the Board of Elders saying, hey, you know, we've extended this divine call to you. And I said, oh, great. I said, my wife is due to be induced with our next child tomorrow. Which was when Irene was born on September 24th. And I said, it's going to be a while before I can get back to you. and so I kind of told them, at least verbally, that it was going to be a little bit of a longer deliberation. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, the situation, my wife's having a kid tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so I took maybe an extra week or two. Then again, I'd only done it once before. I think when I received the call to Brookfield, I think I only took 2 weeks. And I don't know that I told them that. I know some guys do kind of, they do that also to help themselves, saying, I have got to make a decision here. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to have it so open-ended. I think it does the church a great disservice when you hear about pastors that are waiting 7-8 weeks to actually
decide.
Yeah. You should know before then. I mean, there's a lot of things to consider, but it shouldn't take you 2 months.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's okay to put a date like I will know, but you might not know because sometimes you might have a funeral. You might have two funerals. You might have two funerals and a bunch of other crazy going on with people sick and in the hospital. So it might take you 3 weeks. It might take you four. That's why, you know, maybe putting a hard and fast date in that communication isn't the best thing to do. But well, I think.
But you can also undo that.
Yeah, that's right. You can, right. As long as you're open with the communication and say, hey, you know, you tell the congregation that's called you, just so you know, I had a couple funerals and a couple other issues in the church. I'm deliberating properly, but I had to lay off my deliberation for a week because of this. And people are, as long as you're telling them, that's the thing. I think when people don't, when a guy's holding on to a call for going on 2 months and doesn't tell anybody, that's what people get antsy about.
Right. Right.
So anyway, so you receive this call and you're talking to your people. And I guess the one thing we didn't talk about are the holy divine interviews ahead of time. But if that, you know, that's usually them asking you questions. If you submit to an interview, but I think it's wholly appropriate for you at this point, when you receive the call documents, and again, you should not announce that you have this call publicly until you've received the documents in hand. That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
When you do, and you're able to look them over, it is time for you to actually ask clarifying questions of the congregation or the circuit visitor or the DP. I mean, you'll have scoured the internet enough for finding out what you can about the church, but you need to formally ask questions sometimes. Sometimes you won't. Right. Everything could be plain as day in the paperwork, but sometimes you're going to want to ask. You could ask about the compensation level. I think that's a completely appropriate thing for a pastor to do, just to clarify things. I mean, because sometimes there's so many boxes that get checked in those call documents these days, particularly around healthcare, what insurance plan they are. You might be on one of the high deductible plan, let's say, and whatever plan the congregation's offering is totally different than what you're on. So you might want to ask, how does your insurance work? Just so you understand those kinds of things.
Right.
And of course, the Bible actually says that what hearers owe their preachers is that they're going to make their living from the gospel. And so, you might want to ask questions like, it says here that, you're going to give a certain amount of reimbursement for going to conferences. What is that number? Because it'll say negotiable or something like that. Well, mm-hmm. I'm not here to negotiate. It's not like a contract. And what does that mean? So you want to have those things answered before, not only to deliberate the call and discern, but also so that you don't have, monkey business once you get there if you did accept the call, where things aren't clear. You want to clarify things as much as you possibly can while you're in this kind of discernment time. Mm-hmm. But what you really want to discern is, while the compensation is very important, you want to discern the actual foundational and proper things of the office and its conduct, both where you are and where you potentially could be going. And this is where Professor Warnick gave the really good advice about actually writing these things down on lists. And this is what I've done. And I make two different kinds of lists. And this was, again, on the advice that he gave. It was, you make an ecclesiastical list. That is, what are the things that are happening now in the life of the church where I'm serving right now that would lead me to stay where I am? Or what are the things that are going on at that other church that would lead me to go and be their pastor there? It's kind of like pro-con list, right?
Right.
And you do the same thing for the personal end.
Mm.
Because what are the things that are really beneficial to our life as a family here where I am? And what are the things that maybe aren't so beneficial? What are the things that would be really beneficial to our life as a family if we left? And what wouldn't be as good?
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, you might be serving, really close to, at least within a decent drive of your parents or your wife's parents, right?
Right.
And you take a call and now you're not so close to grandmas and grandpas anymore. But depending on how you look at it, that could be a positive or negative, right? Of course, it's all for us, it's always positive. We want to be closer to our families.
Right.
But, but you could, if you accept a call, you could be closer to them than where you are right now. And that would be a very, it's a pro. Hey, man, now we're only 2 hours away from my parents.
Yeah. Or my wife's parents.
Or my wife's parents, exactly. And that, you just think of those are really positive things for our family. But what has to happen is that ecclesiastical list has to take precedence. And that's the difficult thing, because you're trying to objectively measure where Christ would have you serve for the good of his kingdom and the preaching of his gospel. Because you have to really examine yourselves and think about your own gifts and abilities and how they can be used continually at the place where you are or at the place that's called you. And that's the hard thing. It's pretty easy, I think, to figure out, the salary. Am I going to make more money? Am I going to make less money? Am I closer to my mom and dad? Am I farther away from my mom and dad? Are we going to be living in a, you know, more suburban area, more rural area? I mean, that, those things are probably plain as day. What's not so clear is how God can actually use you for the good of his church, whether being where you are or going to another place. And that's the question that's got to be answered, really. And you have to answer it. And that is where the real, you know, the rubber hits the road and the real deliberation lies, I think. As much as important as the other things are, that's what you got to ask. So at my first call, when I was out in Massachusetts, it was very clear to me that the congregation that called me in Brookfield, that the gifts that God had given me and the things that that church needed, I could do. And they needed, and I really believe that at that time, they really needed someone that I knew the things that I could do them there, right? I mean, it sounds kind of silly. But that's the way I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, you know, I think that, again, it takes a lot of self-examination. You really have to think about how you conduct the office and what that place needs. Mm-hmm. And I thought that in Massachusetts, I thought that, you know, I'd been there for 5 years and I had followed a long pastor. And I got to the sense where, you know, I think I am a transition guy here, you know, that I put in a good half a decade, and there were really some positive things that were starting to happen. And I think that they have happened there. And I think that I hope, and I continue to pray for my successor there. He's still there out in Massachusetts 15 years later.
Wow.
You know, that he's been blessed by the things that I was able to do, and God was able to do through me being the pastor there. Mm-hmm. And I'm really content with that, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I went, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I've always kind of taken the tack that, the default is to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And the other congregation really kind of has to make the case to leave. Not, yes. Not their people, but the default is stay. And then you look at to see what is the argument against staying.
Yes. Yes.
I would that's agree. That's sort of how I've thought about it, that, that too often we kind of think in terms of, we just want something new, or we're trying to escape from something that we've done.
Of course. Now this gets back to the covetousness, and that is a danger, and also the hiding from one's sins, not hiding them in the cross of Christ or the absolution, but hiding them, you know, from the world by running away, you know?
Yeah. And even that doesn't work.
Like, of course not.
Because they tend to follow you.
Exactly. So, yes, the default should be, I'm going to stay here. And I need to, whatever things that, now, of course, we shouldn't be so pie into the sky. There are a lot of brothers who have been in very conflicted congregations, either through their own fault, through the congregation's fault, or, of course, through a mix of both, which is how the normal course of fallen, sinful human affairs are. Mm-hmm. That their ministry is concluded at that place. They need to leave.
Right.
And so the deliberation will be very simple.
Right, but that's not the norm. On the whole, and for the most part, that's not the norm.
That's right. Yep. So you have. I think you're right. You have to. You have to think, I'm going to stay here, but I need to be convinced that I need to go because they need me there more than they need me here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been, when I left Brookfield, that was certainly I was completely convinced that was the case. That I'm like, I just knew that I'd been at Brookfield for 8 years, eight and almost nine. And all our children were born there. And it was home to us. And my family knew no different. Mm-hmm. But I knew that they needed me down here more than they needed me in Brookfield. I'm still convinced of that.
Yeah.
And again, personally, this is the thing. I mean, it was very hard to leave Brookfield because, like I said, our four children were born there. The last one, you know, like I said, the day after Hamill called me. But, you know, and so, you know, our oldest was, Sophia was in second grade. We had become very close friends with a good number of the people in the church, like tight, like family, and still are, you know, yeah. Even though I'm not the pastor there anymore. And that was really, really hard, but I knew I had to, you know, it wasn't about me and my buddies that I love hanging out with on Friday.
Right.
Because I loved hanging out with those guys on Friday. But that's not what God called me to be a pastor to be, is just to hang out with my friends.
Right.
Who happened to be members of the church, and I was their pastor, you know. So that was tough.
So then you decide to go. Mm-hmm. How do you announce that? What do you do?
Yep. Well, same kind of thing. You write letters. But what I have done is to the same people, you know, the congregation there, district president, circuit visitors, of course. I have confided in my elders before I made a public announcement on Sunday morning and told them, I'm like, just so they knew that this was going to happen. And I think you've got to make that public announcement again on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And that's very hard. I mean, it's brutal. At least it was for me both times. And, you know, you do it after. Now it's hard if you got two services, but if you only got one service, it's a lot easier because you announce it at the conclusion of the service, then you can walk out and go home. But if you got two services or three services, you know, you're doing it at the conclusion of the service, and then, you know, you still got more work to do that weekend. And the word will spread pretty fast.
Yeah.
But you just simply have to, announce, you know, I've accepted the divine call. We'll be working with the trustees, you know, if you have in a parsonage, and the elders to determine, you know, when we'll be leaving. And, you know, away you go. But that for me was just absolutely miserable. Hmm. It's miserable, but it's exciting at the same time because you as soon as you make the decision, and again, I should have said, you need to be praying. Obviously, you need to go visit your father confessor and how to discern. I mentioned the list, but there's a couple other things we missed. You can ask questions of the circuit visitor, but you also need to confide in brother pastors that you trust and bounce things off of them.
Yeah.
Because the grass is not greener. There are challenges and at every place where you go, but some of them are really exciting. And that's why you really want to dive in and say, yeah, I really want to do this. I really want to think about, you know, building this with God's help. Like for here, at Hamill, the big thing was our school. And what would the school look like? Well, I mean, that was a real challenge. And I thought it would be something that I really would want to work on. And little that it turned out a lot different than I thought it was going to be. But it turned out the way it is today. And God has really blessed us. But that was something I was really excited about. I'm like, yeah, I really want to do this. Mm-hmm. And so you get excited, but you also, you're tempered with the sadness of leaving and concluding something for which you're very thankful. And you know that God used you for the glory of his name and for the salvation of his souls for the time you were there. And you got to be thankful for that. But anyway, before that, you really should be talking to your brother pastors, guys you trust, and bouncing questions off of them about the challenges you might face, about the challenges you're facing where you are now. It really calls for really sober deliberation.
Yeah.
And a lot of thinking and a lot of praying. Our prayers... our prayers really should be, Lord, conform my will to your own. Now, we always pray thy will be done, but it becomes much more intense for a pastor when he's deliberating and mm-hmm. a call, because it really is in your hands, and you've got to figure out what does God want you to do. You kind of think what you want to do, and maybe think what your wife would really like, but what does God want you to do? That's what you got to figure out.
Well, I don't know. He wants you to do both.
I agree. Of right, course.
You got a call to both places.
I know.
So you can't. But I think what you mean is you got to find out really what you can handle.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, like, have an honest assessment of your own gifts as well as struggles.
That's right.
And can you be the guy that they need?
Yeah. I mean, I sounded very Schwimmer-y there. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was, trying to take you to task. It's VP of the Missouri Synod.
But I mean, it's true, but we become Schwimmer-y when it's hard not to.
I know, but we have to resist that to a certain extent, right?
I agree.
You have to say, look, God wants me at both of these places.
Yeah. Yes. And he does put it into your hands as to which one it's going to be. He really, really does. And you got to figure out which one it is. That's the hard thing. Sometimes it's easy. I know it's never been easy for me. Maybe some guys, it's probably been very simple, but it has not been for me.
Mm-hmm.
So you get it, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do. I mean, you get the sense like, okay, I'm leaving, I'm staying. I've never had the opportunity where I've been staying. I mean, you have. I mean, how does that go? Where you decline the call, and how does that go? Is it like a revitalization in the church when you decline?
I think for some, for others who may have, held their tongue and not told you that they wished you were going. Maybe not so much. In my experience, there was, a real vitality of, one, we could lose him.
Yeah.
And then we're back at square one. And so any gains that we've made are lost. That kind of thinking. And even from folks, who might not always agree with you, they're like, they know that vacancies aren't good for you, for our congregation.
Right.
Right. And then it's also helpful for them if they have a history of a pastor leaving every 4 to 5 years, and you get that call at year 4 or 5 and you decline, right? That kind of, there's a revitalization in the sense of we're worth staying at.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and a concentration on, we've got to live with this guy.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. Right. Yep. And so, it's not just going to be the normal, he's here 4 years and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like others. So that's usually good for, keeping lines of communication open, for, people really telling you what they think. Being candid about either the things they're happy about or the things that they're displeased about or that they don't understand or things like that. When a congregation is in the rut of that kind of turnover, they can just oftentimes hold their tongue and like, well, it doesn't matter because in 3 years we're going to get a new guy and he's going to do something different.
Yeah, it is true. There really are congregations like that. Like we have a mutual friend who is in was in your district and now is in mine, and he served his first congregation. He was there like 2 years, and my pastor, his first call when I was a kid, his first call in 1971 was that same parish that our friend was at. Mm-hmm. But he was like in 1971 to 73, and then he left. And then there was like these guys every 2 years. And then our buddy ended up being the guy that was there like from 2007 to 2009. You know, it's just, there are churches like that. And then for a guy to decline and say, no, I'm going to stick it out with you for a while. Man, that must just mm-hmm. be completely mind blowing to people. Like, yeah, he's not leaving. mm-hmm. But I don't know, we got a little far afield there, I suppose. But I think what you need to do, though, so if you accept the call, you need to wrap up your ministry there. Well, how do you do that? You've got to be able to make sure all your paperwork and ducks are in a row. So for the circuit visitor or whoever the vacancy pastor is going to be, and you got to work with your elders. Like, okay, if I'm in a situation where I've got, you know, 10 shut-ins, they need to know who all those people are, where they live, all that kind of thing. Any current illnesses that are in the congregation where you're providing, you know, pretty intensive pastoral care for people, you know, who's got cancer, you know, who, you know, recently lost a loved one that, you know, is really still struggling. Those kind of things, you have to let your elders know, even, you know, normally you think they know some of those things, but they're not going to know everything. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be able to communicate all those kind of things to them appropriately without, obviously, without breaking any confidences. But also you have to communicate that to whoever's going to be providing the pastoral care when you're gone. And mm-hmm. you've got to set a date when you're going to be gone. I mean, you need to know really soon when that's going to happen. And you need to be able to fill out the appropriate paperwork that's going to come from the congregation for your new insurance plan, all the stuff with the rosters and statistics. You're going to have to send a letter to the new district president about an installation date, all those kinds of things. And that gets gets a little hairy, especially, let's say, if you own your own house. You know, you got to put your house on the market. There's a lot that you have to do. It was probably much easier when the vast majority of us were all living in parsonages and you could just roll into a vacant house.
Yeah.
Now I would guess that probably the time in between the acceptance of a call and an installation has gotten a lot longer over the last 20 years as more guys have owned their own homes and have to buy in a new place. I would think, you know, just kind of tying things up takes a little bit longer these days than it probably has in the past. Mm-hmm. But you have to work hard to get those things tied up, and that constant communication, you know, kind of realistic timeframes need to be made on both ends. And you know, working just kind of the details of how that all goes. But as far as the ministry is concerned, you've got to get those things are of great importance. Yeah. And also saying goodbye. Mm-hmm. Most congregations will have some, even if it's just a little, you know, coffee and punch thing on your last Sunday. And that's nice. And you have to be gracious and it might be hard because there's some people you just don't want to say goodbye to because you love them. You really do.
So what are your thoughts on last sermon?
I think it's entirely appropriate to ask for forgiveness where you've failed. I did both times. Now, we always should be asking for forgiveness of those we failed, specifically and individually to people that we did it to. But of course, there's people that you failed that you don't even know that you failed them. Mm-hmm. And I think that we bear witness to the gospel of Christ and the ministry of reconciliation which we hold, we have to be able to say, I am sorry for the places and things in which I have failed you, especially those that I do not know, right? Mm-hmm. And I ask you to forgive me. And I don't think it's not occasion for you saying, I forgive you for all the lousy things you did to me. And I like to tell you about a few of them. You know, but they need to remember you as the pastor who offered the forgiveness of sins in the name of Jesus. That's how you want to be remembered, because that's your office. Mm-hmm. And not only that, the pastor who was willing to live by that same forgiveness and ask for it from God and from his people. Hey, if they think of you as the guy that proclaimed the gospel, the forgiveness of sins, and also lived by it himself and asked for it when he failed, hey, you've done your duty.
Right.
So I think that's kind of your last sermon's got to be about that. You know, what did God bring you here to do, and how will you be united with those same people into life everlasting? It's by the forgiveness of sins in Christ alone. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, I mean, obviously you don't want to get too far afield from the text, but
sure.
I think you still need to put those things in the sermon. I think they're important. Yeah. They're important and completely appropriate.
Any final thoughts as we wrap up?
I knew it was going to be more than 20 minutes.
I should have.
I hope I never get any more calls. I don't want any. So if any, you know, lay people that got any ideas out there, you know, I've actually written my set so that no one would call me anyway. I think for the pastors that are listening to this, I think the big thing is try as you can and ask God to help you as best as you're able to discern what is the best thing for the church. That's it. And weigh appropriately what's best for your family. I mean, that is very obviously mm-hmm. crucial.
Yeah.
But your family is part of the church too. And you have to, as the husband and father, do what you know is what's best for them. And what's best for them should be what's best for the church. Those should not be in conflict.
Yes.
Let's hope not anyway.
Well, there you have it, folks. Thanks, Ben, for your time and insight. And we'll have you on again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.